Heat waves and floods have become more common, and researchers say that increase is linked to human-caused climate change. But which neighborhoods are most vulnerable to the effects of climate change? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview to discuss that question are Northern Kentucky University professor Christy Hoppensberger, Groundwork Ohio River Valley Climate Safe Neighborhoods Director Kelsey Hawkins Johnson, and Greater Cincinnati Climate Safe Neighborhoods Researcher Zoe Robles. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Kelsey, I've read that climate change has been making cities hotter and wetter. Which neighborhoods in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky are most vulnerable to these changes?
Oh, there's quite a few who are vulnerable. We started out with engagement in Lower Price Hill, which is where Groundwork is based. And then a lot of the historic Black neighborhoods in Cincinnati, like Avondale, Bonhill, and Roselawn, are also pretty vulnerable to extreme heat and flooding. And then we did focus our sites on Norwood, more so Ward 1 and Ward 4, back in 2024. I believe, and then Beekman Corridor as well, the summer before that. Those are five neighborhoods connected through Beekman Street. And when we went to Northern Kentucky, we focused on Covington as our recent and most up-to-date Northern Kentucky climate advisory group. We looked at Eastside, Helentown, and Austinburg. Before that, we just did some education workshops as well, where we looked at Newport and Dayton and Covington as well. So that's what started us launching the climate advisory group in Covington.
Okay. And Christy, what do these neighborhoods have in common?
So a lot of these neighborhoods might have more what we call impervious surface, which can be anything: pavement, sidewalks, parking lots, rooftops, buildings. And these surfaces are very hard and they cause runoff to run right into streams instead of into the soil. They also tend to have less vegetation, whether it's trees or green space, big parks and grass, so less shade from the trees, and less vegetation to create transpiration or water into the atmosphere. So they tend to get warmer and have more water runoff.
Is that what makes them more vulnerable too, Christy?
Yeah. So when thinking about areas that are going to get warmer, if they have a lot of that impervious surface or the buildings and the concrete, the heat can stay around more at the nighttime. And we're seeing a lot of summer nighttime temperature averages be warmer than they were in the past. And that's also has been linked to human health, where it's harder for bodies to sleep at night when the temperatures are warmer like that.
Zoe, explain how you've been working with residents in these neighborhoods to come up with solutions to this problem.
Sure. So Groundwork started off doing some data behind the scenes, looking at what are the specific factors that impact the neighborhoods the most. So that way, whenever we went into the neighborhoods, we would host either climate advisory groups or climate advisory workshops. And we would go into the communities, we would explain the data behind what we found was most common in their neighborhoods, whether that was flooding, whether that was heat, whether that was air quality. And then we sort of had an open discussion with the residents that attended, and they could bring up, you know, on this specific street, I noticed this issue, or I would like to see this specific improvement in my area.
Kelsey, are there other commonalities among these neighborhoods? Is there like a social justice component to this too?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of these communities have been subjected through redlining, which is a policy that we prioritize when we look for climate vulnerable neighborhoods, because a lot of the neighborhoods that are climate vulnerable have been impacted by those decisions through redlining. So that intersect as well as social economic, so low income. We look at those data sets, and then as well as socioeconomic and climate vulnerability with that.
We're talking in this recorded interview about neighborhoods most vulnerable to the effects of climate change and the solutions they're developing. So, Kelsey, what concerns do you hear most from residents in these neighborhoods, and do the concerns differ from neighborhood to neighborhood? You've covered a lot of ground in this work.
Yeah, there is so many neighborhoods, but they have some commonalities in regards to just air quality. There are some neighborhoods that are more closer to like factories and also to highways as well. So that really impacts the air quality. I would say in regards to Northern Kentucky, there was some similarities with the need for trees in the communities. I would say like West Newport, the city of Dayton and Covington have been really initiating since we've met with them with the Climate Safe Neighborhoods Program, with planting trees in the community and that being a focal point to help with air quality and flooding and other amenities like that. And a lot of the residents that we worked with identified those locations and areas that would be best for trees. And yeah, I'm excited to see that Northern Kentucky is working on that, particularly from the Climate Safe Neighborhoods Initiative.
Zoe, what are some of the solutions you've been hearing different neighborhoods suggest, the different groups that you've been working with?
So in Northern Kentucky, definitely the most popular solution has been tree plantings. I think that's just because it's the most easy, and it also has a really high output for the cost that you put into it, because it can help reduce air quality and heat and make it safer for pedestrians as well. And then in the Cincinnati neighborhoods, tree plantings was also a big factor, but we saw a little bit more variety in solutions with things like green roofs, community gardens, and heat repelling parking lots.
Okay. Christy, did any of the residents come up with like new approaches that you hadn't thought of going into this process? Were there any kind of innovative things that hadn't occurred to you all yet?
Yeah, I think when thinking about solutions, that's one of the best things about the work Groundwork Ohio River Valley is doing in these climate safe neighborhood programs, is just working directly in the neighborhoods with the residents to really help understand the specific location, because different solutions will work for different neighborhoods. And so it's so important to get individuals involved and have their voices heard when deciding where vegetation should go and the impacts. I know some of the neighborhoods I've been working with most recently have a lot of concerns about air quality, and people think about trees and they might think about pollen or allergies. And so clear communication is really important, and thinking and just knowing about all the different concerns neighborhoods can have.
Christy, are these ideas, these solutions that residents are coming up with, are they things that cost a lot of money?
No, like Zoe said, you know, trees are kind of more affordable, but then with trees, sometimes we need to think, especially in an area with a lot of concrete, we need to think a little bit about maintenance when we first put them in. So there might be a few costs associated with making sure the tree stays healthy over the first few years that it's put in. I'm not involved in projects when we think about extreme heat. A lot of work is also on looking at buildings and cooling, air conditioning. That I'm not involved in that type of work, but I would see that would be a bit more costly to retrofit buildings and things like that.
Sure. Christy, are there funding sources to help pay for these solutions, the trees and the heat repelling things that Zoe was talking about? Are there funding sources out there to help with that?
Yeah, so funding sources are always changing, and we've had a lot of success with interest from local foundations. We recently were awarded some funds from the Ohio State EPA, and that will be working on environmental monitoring in the neighborhood of Avondale with some air quality and also biodiversity monitoring. And that was just awarded this year. And there's sometimes federal opportunities. The U.S. Forest Service invests in urban trees from time to time. So there are some opportunities out there.
Kelsey, what are there other sources that you all have been able to tap into?
Yeah, so Groundwork has also, we did a crowdfunding campaign recently. It was for, I think it was like green vegetation for community gardens. A lot of our workforce program actually at Groundwork does a lot of the implementation of projects from the Climate Safe Neighborhoods program, and that is suggested by the residents. So the Green Roof, our Green Core, which is our young adult program, has also done a rain garden installation. So we just, in regards to funding, just had a call for support for funding for community solutions for every neighborhood that we've worked with. And I would say with local funding as well, we've been happy to work with and support other partners' initiatives, receive support and collaboration with Green Umbrella as well, who work with us on the Climate Safe Neighborhoods Program and the City of Cincinnati Office of Environment Sustainability. So, we're really excited to work with these partners, and they continue to support our projects as well and resident solutions.
Okay. I want to ask each of you this. I'll start with you, Zoe. What's the most challenging part of this work? It seems like there are a lot of moving pieces, a lot of people to talk to, a lot of different opinions to juggle. What's the biggest challenge in all this?
I think the biggest challenge that I experienced with all of this was that we want to get the residents' input, and figuring out the best way to get resident attendance was a big factor. You know, trying to do social media campaigns and trying to post physical flyers, trying to find venues that'll be accessible to the communities. And there were definitely some communities that had a larger turnout of residents than others. And it's sort of difficult to gauge, was that a result of actually there are just less people in the community that care about the issue, or is it that we needed to find a different approach in order to increase attendance so we can get a good number of feedback? Because the more feedback, the better.
Sure. What do you think, Christy? What's the most difficult, or I shouldn't say difficult, what's the most challenging part of all this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I could think a bit longer about, I think I wouldn't say it was a challenge, but I think for folks who want to hit the ground running, that I've been doing a lot of work the last few years, bringing people together from all different areas to work on problems. And I think that time is needed to form these relationships between organizations, between researchers and groups like Groundwork Ohio River Valley. And once you invest your time into forming these relationships and collaborations, when opportunities like extending climate safe neighborhoods into Northern Kentucky come about, then you can really take off because you've invested that time into forming these partnerships already. And so when we're doing projects in the region and we're trying to do more and more of them, bringing people together more often so that people can start talking and networking and being able to move forward on these great projects. So investing that time into that network and relationship building.
What do you think, Kelsey?
Yeah, echoing what Dr. Christie was talking about with time, I think that's important, having and keeping the momentum going. A lot of the times with the neighborhoods that we've engaged with, there are some that are highly engaged. I think it's easier to keep the ball rolling with them versus others. Keeping local government involved is also key, and community councils. So it's just building on relationships, continuing to find resources to build capacity for the residents to stay engaged is also, has been a challenge, but it's, I think that's where the time intersects with that as well, is just building that time in to support their advocacy efforts regarding their action plans and just continue to be of service to the work that they're looking to see within their community and do the best that we can to support them, whether that's with workforce development, funding, education. I would just say that for difficulty.
Yeah. Zoe, you were talking about just figuring out the best ways to reach residents and kind of connect them. What about just the time that they have to spend on this? I mean, it seems like people are so busy these days. Was that ever challenging just to, I don't know if convince is the right word, but to make that case to residents that, hey, we really need your input and I know you're busy, but could you spend some time with us to really work on this? Was that a challenge?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, that's definitely a challenge that we had to take into consideration, especially with things like what are we going to be able to provide to the residents in exchange for their time? You know, are we going to be able to provide childcare during the meetings? Are we going to be able to like reimburse them? And I think sort of one of the compromises is that originally in the Cincinnati neighborhoods, they did the climate advocacy groups, which were like weekly meetings that people had to commit to going to. And then in Northern Kentucky, we decided to make it one night workshops where people only had to commit to attending that one session and then trying to get as much feedback as we could from that one session. So that way we're not wasting people's time or not wasting it, but we're not making people feel like that us trying to help their community is becoming a burden on their time.
Yeah, I can see that. Christy, I don't know if this question is going to make any sense, but do you ever run into people in these neighborhoods who don't see the problem, who don't think there's a problem? Or does everybody pretty much say it's getting hotter, it's getting wetter, we need to do something?
I guess most recently, it's maybe not that they don't realize it or are impacted by it. It might be that they have other concerns that are more pressing to them that might be at the forefront of their mind than maybe environmental topics.
So, Kelsey, you talked about this a little bit at the beginning, but how many neighborhoods have created these climate resilience plans so far?
Gosh, I think we're at like 15 now. Yeah, including Covington, as well as Beekman Corridor, which is 5 neighborhoods. We did 3 neighborhoods in Covington, Norwood, it was 2 wards, Avondale as well, Lower Price Hill, Bonham, Roselawn, and we just wrapped up Witten Hills this spring. So yeah, we're keeping the momentum going, thankfully, through support with other institutions. And yeah, we're looking forward to talking with the West End at the end of the summer about what's happening in their neighborhood and what they would like to see in regards to resources and green amenities. And yeah, just getting the conversation started with them in support with the City of Cincinnati, Office of Environment Sustainability, and Green Umbrella, who are our partners in our climate advisory group work.
Kelsey, what's the goal? How many plans would you like to see created? Is there a goal for the next, you know, over the next 5 years or whatever?
I would say after this year, the goal would be to focus more on the implementation piece. So having a lot of the solutions be actualized with community input. So there are some communities we would have to revisit in regards to their plans. I would like to expand our partnerships in every neighborhood in the coming years. And just see a lot more green spaces, a reduction of air pollution, and see that measured as well. A lot of the work that we do with our air quality program does that work, where we are measuring air quality and the results from that with residents. But I would say with the climate action plans through groundwork, like it would be great to continue supporting neighborhoods and their ideas. But in regards to just continuing with what we already started, I think that's important for us in the coming years. And that's my goal.
Yeah. Christy, I don't know if this is anything you've studied, but do you have a sense for how Cincinnati compares to other cities in this work or?
It's not something I look at where I compare the climate action work happening in other cities, but I know that Green Umbrella has really been leading the Midwest region for action, and along with Groundwork, Ohio River Valley, and their partnerships. Cincinnati is a very, very active region in climate resilience work, along with the city, and the Office of Environment and Sustainability has been a big part of that as well. I was going to share, if people want to look at a website, climatecentral.org is a really cool website where you can look at maps and data. They do little reports every so often, and they compare major cities in the United States. So you can, Cincinnati is one of them that they have data for, and you can look from time to time on some of the current data and see how Cincinnati compares to other areas in the country.
Great tip. So Zoe, you're out in the community with this work, talking to residents. What does that mean to you? I mean, do you get a certain, I don't know, sense of fulfillment? Do you feel like you're contributing to the solution in this work? What does this work mean to you just personally?
I think that it's really impactful for me to have the opportunity to do this, because I feel like particularly with a topic such as climate change, it's really easy to get caught up in the doom and gloom of, you know, we're not doing things fast enough, we're not doing things right, and it's getting worse. And it's really helpful to maintain like a positive impact when you're actually out there in local communities doing the work that's actually going to be helping people. I think it's easier to stay optimistic because you meet people that are very passionate about making change in their communities. And it's like, well, if I'm in this community and talking to this number of residents that are all really passionate about solving problems, then surely there are people like that in every community across the United States. And maybe it's not all doom and gloom and we can have an impact. We just have to start smaller.
I've been talking with Northern Kentucky University Professor Christy Hopsensberger, Groundwork Ohio River Valley Climate Safe Neighborhoods Director Kelsey Hawkins Johnson, and Greater Cincinnati Climate Safe Neighborhoods Researcher Zoe Robles. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Ella Rowan. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.